LA does not feel the same without him. Those words on Kobe Bryant by a graffiti artist known as the Black Light King. The Black Light King joining us in tonight's Voices of the People, remembering Kobe Bryant. Thanks for coming in.
Oh, thank you so much for having me, Christine. I really appreciate it.
I'm liking your Lakers shirt here.
Yeah. You know, you have to represent for the city and for remembering Kobe's legacy as well.
So we're going to talk about your art in just a second. But let me ask you this first off. You're a graffiti artist.
Yes.
What does that mean?
Well, that means that we do art that's for like the people and geared towards a subculture community. Art that represents all different aspects of diversity and people that come from more like impoverished neighborhoods. Mm. You know, we embrace all kinds of styles and all kinds of ways of expression as well too, and we come together collectively and put together our resources to put up art on the walls.
I think of graffiti art and I think of somebody's name or, their neighborhood, but it's not that kind of graffiti.
Yeah. Well, graffiti in itself has like a lot of levels to it. It first starts off with like hand styles and putting your name up and, doing it like in a certain style, putting up your name.
Did you do all that?
I did some of that,
yeah. Back in the day.
Yeah, back in the day. Right now, I'm doing a little bit more like intricate, stylized works that involves more like thematic themes and more things that, involve concepts and elements, and a lot of like characters, a lot of ideas especially. A lot that has to do with, different types of cultures and studying different ways in which people approach painting. Different design elements as well too. And I'm constantly studying and mapping out ways where I could like learn and evolve as an artist.
Because I look at your work, and if anybody looks at your Instagram page, which is gorgeous, Black Light King, it looks to me like art because you do walls, you do big works.
Yeah. Well, I was really fortunate enough to, start applying a little bit of pressure in my style and growing stylistically where a lot of different types of diversity started appreciating it, especially a lot of, like, business owners and a lot of people that own buildings that were really, really run down. I started embracing it, and I was able to put more stylized artwork on them. But at the same time, holding its roots in graffiti as well, too, for it not to be, because there's always something of gentrification that goes on in the impoverished hoods. And we want to make sure that we keep an element still of a graffiti style in it to be able to, keep it for the people and by the people as well. So a lot of business owners are open to that idea as long as it looks, like something constructive and something aesthetically pleasing for the eye.
And we should note that unlike other artists that people might see out there, you do a lot of fluorescent masterpieces, a lot of color too.
Yeah. A lot of like fluorescent neon colors, a lot of like, stuff that changes with lights, a lot of things that are involved with ancient hieroglyphics or Aztec culture, a lot of things that are connected to like roots as well too. With fluorescent colors, they're really loud and vibrant, so you're able to just throw an array of different styles in it.
Well, I highly recommend, because this is obviously a podcast, people are listening, for them to look at your artwork, Black Light King. You paint with what?
I paint with a combination. I paint with a spray paint. Something when I'm doing indoors, I'll do with a spray paint and then acrylics. I like using Rust-Oleum, Montana's.
What's that?
Oh, those are like certain brands,
Oh, okay. Sorry, not in the know.
Yeah, for people that know graffiti.
But you're doing a whole wall with a spray can?
Sometimes we do a whole wall with a spray can. Sometimes when we have like huge, when I'm doing like huge productions, we do like roller paint. We'll get like house paint and then this covers like the blocky, like the main areas. And so that allows you to just get all your colors down, all your composition. Mm-hmm. And then on top of that, you add the spray paint, and the spray paint allows you to chisel things out and allows you form things out. It feels like sculpture the more you do it. It feels more like carving with light. So you just carve out your elements, carve out the shapes. And then, and let these images come to life. But you usually want to start off with a sketch because you know, every wall has its own composition and its own way of being in an environment. So you want to make sure that the art complements that environment that it's in. So sometimes you want to like look at it, sketch it out a couple times, and then, you know, figure out the best image to put on it.
So as a news anchor, I had a chance to cover you when they had a gallery showing in Huntington Beach of graffiti artist.
Yeah, that was really
fun. It was amazing. Yeah, yeah. Amazing. So I was obviously on your page to see that you did a mural on Kobe Bryant.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
You're born and raised in L.A.?
I'm born and raised in Long Beach, and I've been in L.A. for like the past like 10 years now. We moved to Southeast, you know, when I was like a teenager with my parents. But you know, all my teenage years, I grew up in Long Beach. Mm-hmm. And then I've been working in L.A. ever since. Kobe was like a huge inspiration to everyone here in Southern California, not just L.A., but Southern California in general. He was somebody like a role model and somebody that we always looked up to. And I felt like no matter what would happen, like politically or sociologically, whatever, Kobe was just always set. You know, he was always a good role model and example for the community. And I remember when I was in middle school, especially, he was, you know, he started playing. And I remember, wow, like, you know, all the kids, we all loved them and everything. We were all kids looking up to him. And you know, it's almost like I grew up with him in the background the whole time, you know, and then killing it, winning championships, representing for the city. You know, me and my friends would go crazy, you know, and I have some diehard super Laker fans that would go crazy. But then aside from basketball, his legacy started to transcend even deeper. It started to transcend to culturally started to transcend diversity, started to transcend you know, ways in which we could see someone to look up to that has goals and is a positive influence on kids and on the world in general, you know, especially for the Hispanic community. He was really reached out to a lot of us. Me being a, you know, Mexican American, we would see that, you know, as well.
We were noticing that in the newsroom, and it really stood out to us how much the Latino community came out after that helicopter crash that killed Kobe Bryant, his daughter, and seven others. And we remember them fondly as well. We were not, I don't want to say surprised, but moved that so many cultures felt touched by Kobe.
Yeah, it was really unfortunate what happened. And we always felt, especially from like my perspective of being a, you know, a Mexican-American here in L.A., he was like an older brother, you know. I didn't know him personally, but from like, you know, growing up with him in the background and, you know, how proud he was of our city and how much reach out he did for the community, for all sorts of, you know, races and all sorts of, you know, backgrounds and stuff. You know, it felt that like, oh, wow, like he's a person that genuinely cares about the people that inhabit, you know, this place, you know. And so it almost like his legacy transcended the world after that, you know.
I loved when you started to talk about Kobe. I felt your energy. I felt the joy as you kind of looked back for a moment.
Yeah. Because he was really influential. And influential in a way where, like, the way he lived taught us that with sports or with any practice in general, if you really focus and you really, you know, hone your craft, then you could excel in life and not just, you know, of course, sports, but transcend sports.
You a sports guy?
Yeah, I'm a sports guy. Not like a super, super diehard like some of my other friends, you know. But yeah, of course, I support the Lakers. I support Kobe Bryant. I support LeBron. I support our teams. You know, I support LAFC and the Rams now that we have them. And
you're an LA guy.
Yeah, I'm a super LA guy. Everything that's LA, you know. And
but we should note you've never been to a Laker game.
No. I've never been. No, my friends we're always, you know, going to them and stuff like that. But I always like said like, oh yeah, I'll go. You know, I'll go later or sometimes I'll go celebrate with them when we win and everything like that, you know. And it was almost like something that would bring us together, you know.
Would you go to the parades when they'd win?
Yeah, sometimes I'd go to parades, with my family and stuff like that. And my friends would get like, you know, really drunk and going.
Quite the celebration to win a championship. Right?
Yeah, it was quite the celebration, and people would just go wild on those things, you know. And you know, but it's good to see the city come together and people come together for something like, you know, for a win and everything like that. And he brought us like 5 championships. So that's.
Do you have a visual of Kobe Bryant riding in that parade?
Oh yeah, yeah. You know, the visuals of him, you know, being there with. You know, with Shaq and, you know, and just enjoying life and enjoying, you know, the great things that he brought upon us, you know, a lot of hope and prosperity that, you know, that the city got from those great moments.
I've loved doing this podcast and hearing the different ways people thought of or knew of Kobe Bryant, whether it's going to a game and actually knowing him or just going as a fan. You're that guy who would gather with friends around the TV and watch a game.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I remember, you know, when I would be I was working at a sign job a few years ago, and we'd get together and watch the game, especially the finals and stuff. And they were really tight. And, you know, we would all like cringe our teeth at like all the at all the moments and everything like that, you know, and we would all celebrate as a whole. And, you know, it was a great joy that, you know, to know that our city was being properly represented, mm-hmm. properly, you know, watched worldwide as well, too.
Well, I love that you were taking me to one of your parties. I feel like I'm there with you and your friends watching.
Yeah.
That's a lot of fun.
Yeah, those parties were crazy. Yeah, a lot of drinking.
Okay.
Yeah, you know, a lot of partying, a lot of yelling at the TV.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, but
were you a Kobe fan?
Yeah. No, absolutely. Absolutely a Kobe fan, a Kobe, you know, diehard fan. That's why when the unfortunate thing happened, it just like felt right to the core. It didn't feel real. It didn't feel right, you know. And I remember feeling like dizzy about it and just uneasy the whole because I was in traffic and stuff, and I would just felt a lot of unease about what had happened and unreal that it had happened to somebody so prolific within our community and within our society as well too.
Where were you when you heard the news?
I was with a group of my graffiti friends, and we were having a meeting. Yeah, and then you know, one of our friends pulled it up, and you know, I thought it was a meme or something like that. I didn't think it was real, you know, myself. And so, you know, it went on, but I remember just like being up against the wall and just like thinking like, no, this is weird. This is not normal. This is not, you know, but then like as it started to sink in, it really sunk in once I sat in my truck and started, you know, going in traffic. That's when it really sunk in. And then at the same time, there was like this collective consciousness of grief, this collective grief. Everybody felt so uneasy as well because he was such a stamp in LA, and it was just like he was this. No matter how messed up things were, he was just set, you know. He was like our dude, and, you know, he was a representative of the people. And so that being taken away from us, there was this like a certain sense of like unease about everything and an uncertainty about everything, and even in life in general, you know. And then, you know, and then finding out, because I found out about later about his daughter as well too, and then those other passengers. And it just really saddens me the way that, you know, I don't want to say bad, but, you know, the unfortunate things that happen to good people and people that are really part of our greater society. It's something that, you know, moved me, and it moved me enough to start doing a piece to commemorate him.
Yeah, you did a mural. We're going to talk about that in a second, but let me ask you this. I'm thinking back to the day of that helicopter crash and how everybody got the news. So you're with a group of other graffiti artists for a meeting. Did it help to be together with other people to talk about it, to share in the moment?
Well, it was one of those things where it was like a shock. And I guess it was a shock not only to me but to my friends as well, where it's not like something we could have talked about it. Like, where we felt like the need to talk about it right then and then, we're just like, wow, that's happened. And there was like this weird silence, because I guess we all had to deal with it in our own way, you know. But then, like, the more it sinks in and, like, you know, we watch the news and everything like that, then I feel that, you know, everyone all started grieving in their own way after that. And I sure did. And You know, I had some of my friends there as well too, and you know, they mentioned something about it. We, you know, we gave each other a hug as well, but it didn't really sink in until like afterwards. I guess like when it happened, it was more of like the shock factor that it would be like the least person they would happen to, type of thing. And for a while, for a second there, I mean, more than a second, like for 20, 30 minutes, you know, even half an hour, it feels unreal. It feels like this is a sub-reality.
I think being a news anchor, I always say whenever there is an important news issue, we come in to work. So we're working on the matter. We're getting information. We're giving out information. So in a way, that's a chance for me to be part of what's happening and to process it and to share thoughts and to grieve through work. So what did you do the rest of your day? How was your day?
It was off. Yeah, I remember I had a meeting with one of my clients. I was going to paint his mural, and the meeting didn't even, I mean, it went well, but it didn't really go as deep as, because I usually connect with my clients when it comes down to art. But it was just, you know, a little bit more informal. And then like the rest of the day was just a lot by myself, to be honest. You know, I went back to my studio, sat by myself, and I have a view of downtown of my studio, my art studio, and I saw the building, the Korean Air building, change its lights into the Laker colors. And that's when you knew that you weren't, I mean, like, that we were all grieving in our own way, but we weren't alone at the same time, you know? And there's this connection that you feel with, like, the entire city, with everyone. It's almost like an earthquake, you know? Like, no matter what, we're all going to feel it. And that's how I felt with everybody. Yeah.
Interesting thought here in Los Angeles, we're earthquake country.
Yeah.
So you stepped away from your fluorescent masterpieces and did a mural dedicated to Kobe Bryant. How does that happen? How do you suddenly have a whole building to paint?
Yeah, well, the crazy thing was that in that area that I paint, it's a lot of the area is a little bit more like run down. It's a little bit more of an impoverished neighborhood. And so my studio was up the street there. And so I started painting a lot of walls in that area. And I started bringing in, you know, my graffiti crew as well. And, you know, was able to put a lot of art and different styles into that area. And as I was painting, the owner had, you know, I saw the owner of the place. And we had talked about doing another mural there. But then, like, right when it happened, you know, as I was sitting alone and I was just, like, really feeling, like, the grief of it and really feeling really uneasy about the uncertainty, I called him. I'm like, no, bro, we're going to put a Kobe in there. And he was about it. You know, he was definitely about it. And it was really important to put it up of him up on in the hood, you know? Yeah, because in the hood is where he's needed the most. Because, like, you know, he we have to put, like, people, like, kids have to be inspired by that, you know? Especially kids that grow up in the hood have to be inspired and understand who he is, you know? And so, like, in the hood is, like, really, for me, really more important to put him up as a cultural standpoint, as, like a way to, as a remembrance of him, you know?
So what is the location?
The location is Washington Boulevard and Staunton.
Okay. What part of town is that?
That would be the borderline between Vernon and downtown. It's kind of like where, like, Washington and Alameda is that?
I actually think I saw that
mural. Yeah.
Yes, I was down there actually to pick up some vintage clothing at a friend who had a business. I think I actually saw that.
Yeah, yeah. It's right there. It's at a part of town where there's, like, a lot of, like, commerce.
Yeah, industrial area.
It's industrial. But at the same time, it's really run down. There's, like, a small homeless population around there as well, too. There's, like, a couple middle schools. And it's crazy because the amount of people that were stopping by and supporting it and looking at it and not expecting to see a Kobe mural be up, you know, especially because it's a lot of commerce. A lot of, like, the working class people are there and they're just going for the day to day, or they're just going into work, coming out of work.
Because it's not a residential area. It's an area that shuts down at night.
Yeah, it shuts down at night. Yeah, exactly. It's really it can get run down a lot, you know. And,
well, I love the area. To me, you know, I went to go, like I said, a friend had a vintage clothing shop. Not a shop, but she kept her stuff there.
Yeah.
And so I went to go pick some stuff up.
Yeah.
But I love the grit.
It's grit.
Of industry.
Yeah. Especially that's a good place for graffiti as well too. That's a good place for it to, you know, for it to flourish. There's all kinds of things from like tags to throw ups to pieces to productions. Everything that a, you know, graffiti writer could want and need. And that area, the grit of it, if you do you know, good work, it'll stand. You know, or if it doesn't, the street itself will devour it. The streets in itself have a way of devouring, you know, and spitting out the work that's not good and
like
rehashing
over?
It. Yeah, like going over stuff. Yeah, it's almost like I compare it as like waves or like sandcastles in a sense, you know. And it only felt right to make sure that Kobe was there because he represented all aspects of L.A., especially impoverished neighborhoods, especially parts that were like really dark, you know. And to bring light to the darkness is really important.
How so? Because he lived in Newport, traveled often by helicopter, grew up in Italy, and how so?
Well, because you know, basketball always has like a strong relationship with the hip hop community, you know, and especially you know, basketball in general is a sport that comes from you know, like the lower classes of society, a lot of lower classes of society. And sports is a good way for kids to find a way out of, like, you know, gangs or, you know, crime or drugs or whatever it'd be. I noticed that, you know, in school, like the youngsters, they either, you know, go into the academics, and there's people that, you know, aren't really good at academics, so they go into the arts, you know, and there's people that can't do either, and so there's sports for them. And sports is a good way to, you know, to teach youths and kids, like, you know, responsibility and leadership. And,
Were you into academics?
No, I'm more into the arts.
Okay. Well, you've done well, my friend.
Obviously, you
followed your intuition. So a mural like that, it's a whole wall of the building?
Yeah, it's the whole wall. Yeah. Well, with Kobe, I wanted to paint him as big as possible. And so I just pretty much went off a sketch, but then along the sketch, I started being able to put up my own style. You know, stylistically, it became my own style, but then I put, like, you know, some wings behind him to show that he's, like, in a better place and almost to represent also Los Angeles as well. Yeah.
City
of Angels. Yeah, like an angel, like, looking over us, especially like, in the hood, you know, especially. Then I put his daughter's name, you know, in the bottom as well. And I try to paint him as big as possible, as big as my ladder could allow me to.
With a spray can.
With a spray can, yeah. With a spray can.
That is something. How long did that take?
Like about 2.5 days. Yeah, pretty like
fast.
2.5 days. Yeah, I did it pretty quick, you know. Well, because to me especially, it was a way to gain closure, you know, a way to, like, express myself and how I felt about the whole thing. And about, like, pride for the city and proud to, you know, and lucky and fortunate to be an artist in this lifetime and to, like, have, you know, and to have this happen is unfortunate, but to try to turn something negative into something positive as well.
How did it feel when you're up there on your ladder for 2.5 days painting this? What were you thinking?
Well, it feels great. It feels, like, liberating. It feels like a true connection with the great Kobe Bryant, like a way of giving back, you know, because, like, once you're up there, and the reason why a lot of people I feel drawn to graffiti is that when you're painting really big, you're not only painting, but you're also exercising, using your arms, using your legs, using your whole body.
I had no idea.
Yeah, so you're releasing endorphins at
the
same time.
Who needs the gym?
Yeah, who needs a gym? Yeah. If only I don't eat, and, you know, I have to stop eating in and out. if I stop eating, I'll be in shape.
Well, when I was down there, I found a taco stand.
Oh, yeah, the taco stands right there are killers. Yeah, they're good. They're really good. Yeah, but yeah, so when you're up there, you know, you're releasing endorphins because you're using your whole body as a motion. At the same time, as you're seeing this figure come to life, you're also releasing dopamine. So you get the reward as well, too.
What's the hardest part? Because I look at your page, Black Light King, and you don't do a lot of people, right? Like individual?
Yeah, no, I don't. To be honest, I usually tend to stay away from painting, you know, pop cultures or celebrities. Because I usually try to explore, like, different concepts with different meanings. A lot has to do with, like, ancient ancient cultures, you know, or a lot of like the psychedelic type of culture. However, with Kobe, it was different because it was more collective what we all felt. Because Kobe, like how I said before, you know, I'm a huge Laker fan and I support, you know, I've always supported Kobe, but he transcended the world of sports. Mm-hmm. He became a cultural icon for the world, you know, and the way he lived especially. And so, you know, for me, I feel that he should be painting it at like there should be even more murals going up, you know.
Well, we were noting that there are. I think we all do what we do, and so no surprise, artists, you do your craft, singers, yeah. They take to the mic kind of thing.
Yeah.
But there have been a lot of murals popping up. Your thoughts on the murals?
I love each and every one of them, and I feel that we should even have more because we have to think of like of the time of like the Renaissance in a way, you know, the Da Vinci and Michelangelo and all these greats, or, you know, they were venerating someone like, you know, like Jesus or something. And it's kind of like a cultural icon to leave. In our generation, our time, it's like we have to, like, look up to people that were role models. And especially, like, think about the future generations and how they're going to see it, the kids that aren't even born yet, you know. And the more murals there are, the more they see Kobe, like a Kobe Bryant mural. And so who was this person? Why was he loved so much, you know? And why do artists feel so compelled to express their love in such a way? And the good thing about art is that it expresses your individual style, so everybody has their own way to interpret the love that they had for somebody, you know, as such a big old cultural icon as Kobe was.
How hard is it, since you don't do faces and people, that's not your daily thing,
yeah.
How hard is it to paint somebody?
Oh, no, it's difficult. No. So I really respect my, you know, some of my other friends that could like paint portraits to the teeth and everything. It's really difficult because, you know, with painting portraits, it's either going to be like it looks like them or it's not, you know. And so, you know, one has to like do a lot of studying, a lot of going back and forth, a lot of perspective, a bunch of different factors. It's really difficult, but it's rewarding in its sense too, because you know, if you could get some sort of like resemblance, or you could get a way of you know, of transmitting that person into daily life for people to feel it, then it's rewarding in itself, you know. And the good thing about something being difficult is that it's like a never ending process. So you always want to be like a student of art and a student of life. You know?
So when you would step back, you finished the project and took a look at it, what is it that you liked or felt about your art, your mural?
Well, I liked the power of it, that it felt for other people. Because as artists, like, it feels good to be in the moment of creating. But like once it's done, I started seeing like just random people from different sorts of lives that wouldn't even talk to each other stop and take photos with it and converse with one another and converse with me. And like the power that it had to bring people together is what was like the most rewarding thing, where I felt that like my grievance became a way to heal not just myself but the collective community in that area as well too. And at the same time, it's you know, by putting them in different parts of the hoods, we're representing those hoods as well. And each hood is like putting up like a flag and saying like, yeah, we love Kobe too, you know? And that's really rewarding in itself.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, you're right, because people don't always get to different neighborhoods or communities. And so if there's not one in your community, you might only see it on TV or on Instagram.
Yeah, yeah. And there's something about seeing a live mural that you really could see like the strokes of the artist, or like where they shaded in and like the love that they put. And, you know, you really could feel the piece. You know, the photo is really good, but it only goes so far. Seeing it live and being in the presence of a mural, you really get the full experience of what the artist was communicating through it.
So it's more towards the Vernon area, or mm-hmm. in Vernon.
More towards the Vernon area. It's kind of like the right in the borderline of Los Angeles and Vernon.
Right. And so you live in downtown Los Angeles. How often do you go back to look at it?
Almost every day.
Really?
Yeah, every day. I mean, you know, I've been fortunate enough to like really build a relationship with the business community there. And the graffiti community especially. And so, you know, I pass by there, you know, in my routes to and from there. Yeah, people recently like put candles in there as well too, which is really cool. And you know, people are always taking photos of it. But yeah, I pass by every day, just like, you know, just to check up on it and everything like that. And like the really important thing is to be able to, by putting someone really important, it's and doing like a rest in peace, it also gets respected, because he was respected by all sorts of walks of life in Los Angeles. You know, it wasn't just like the basketball, but mm-hmm. it was you know, the basketball fans, but it was a lot of people, a lot of the working class people, like the Hispanic community, like I mentioned earlier, the Asian community, business owners, all ages, all races. It was just he was such an important figure in our society.
When's the last time you can remember doing a mural of somebody?
Oh, I just don't not remember. I think I did a mural that was a rendition of a sculpture that I really liked of Perseus, and it was a Perseus crucifying Medusa from.
Well, you're going way back now.
It's way back. Yeah, it's kind of like 3 or 4 years ago.
Okay.
And I did it like in a sculpture type of style, you know, and it was based on a photograph, so it was sort of a portrait, but it wasn't somebody that was like known. It was more of like a famous sculpture that an artist did. I forgot the artist's name, but you know, later somebody passed by that had seen it, and they said that what they interpreted of it was that somebody crucifying their ego, and I was like, oh, that's pretty cool. You know, that's a pretty cool take on it. You know,
so this is really an unusual project for you.
Mm-hmm.
Gosh, yeah. That feels so much more meaningful that you stepped out of the norm of your craft.
Yeah, well, one of the craziest things too was that stepping outside of stepping outside of my comfort zone, especially. Yeah, especially because we all loved Kobe so much, and he was such a central figure on the TV and on the newspaper that his face was like really familiar, and he was so much loved by everybody. That there's this extra pressure, you know, by putting him up there of like, oh, well, it has to like look like him, or it has to resemble him, or, you know, you have to, you know, give a lot of like love to it. And that pressure in itself is enough for like an artist to cave in and be like, no, I'm not going to do it because I can't stand the pressure. But then, like, you know, going back in what Kobe left behind and the Mamba mentality and like persevering and like pushing yourself to the maximum and like, you know, fighting against adversity, those things are in a way poetic in themselves, you know, especially when it comes down to doing things that are scary or stepping outside of your comfort zone or doing something that you wouldn't normally do, but that you have the heart to do it. So my way to reason with it was just to put my heart forward and to just do it with pure love and with pure intentions to put something out for the community, for us to really enjoy. And that in itself, you know, became transformative for me especially.
How do you handle the critics? Because I know we get them in news. People are quick to tweet your post something on your page.
Yeah, exactly.
How do you handle the critics as an artist?
Well, I mean, the critics are a blessing as well, too.
Oh, please tell me. Teach me.
Critics will, you know, will push you to become better. Critics will tell you something, and I think I heard E.T., the hip-hop preacher, say this, that critics will tell you something that your parents won't tell you, you know? Yeah. And that's always like a blessing, because that allows you to grow. If you don't really take it so personally, but take them as a source of growth and inspiration, then it could actually help you to become like a better person and a better artist, you know?
You're so right. They are our teachers.
Yeah, they are our teachers. Yeah. I mean, and then there's some people that are like super just out to like offend you or whatever. And obviously those get ignored and everything. But like everybody, you know, everybody's opinion, everything, it's a blessing, and it's a source of learning, and it's all of a learning experience, which is really exciting for me, especially being an artist here in L.A. Mm-hmm.
So how long will your Kobe Bryant mural in near Vernon stay?
It's up to the city. The tenant was the one that allowed me, you know, to do it. You know, it's funny, though, because even if I would have done it, like, illegally, I think I could have done it, you know. It all depends on the city itself. It all depends on the you know, if it's like legality or whatever. The good thing is, though, is that the city is like really open to murals, and so Kobe Bryant's murals, it's like a legacy, and so that's why it's really good to put them up in the hood, and really good for artists to just paint their own version, even if they don't think it's like the best, or if they can't even paint a portrait. just put his name up or something like that. I really embrace that. You know, I really embrace the colors being up, because not only that, the whole world is also looking at us, and they're looking at LA, and they're looking at how much we loved him as well, because the world loved him too, you know? Yeah. So it's really important for us to like really rep him hard.
Okay. We should note though that you don't normally reveal yourself. No. When you paint. We're doing a podcast, so it's audio only. I was surprised to see you walk up not in the mask that you're known for wearing.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I hide my identity because I do a lot of like illegal murals as well, too.
Uh-oh.
And, you know, all kinds of stuff. But, you know, I really enjoy my personal life as well, too.
So the illegal murals, do we touch on that at all? How does that work in your industry?
I mean, the thing is, it's like there's walls that are just really mangled, and the business owners, you know, just really let them deteriorate, you know? And these walls like start like breeding a bunch of like, bad things around them, you know, like bad, like the homeless people bring in bad drugs and everything like that. And so, and sometimes the building owners just let them be where they are. So sometimes, you know, even when you ask for permission, they just like, there's a bad stigma with graffiti. You know, there's just like, oh, they're going to come up with their letters and there's going to be more trash and all
that. Tagging.
They're going to be tagging. Yeah. And the cops aren't going to like it. So, you know, sometimes it's just a matter of just grabbing paint and looking at a wall that's like really messed up and making it better. I mean, it just sounds simple, but it's so complicated when it comes down to the great scheme of things.
Since we're on the topic, what do you say to those who have a concern about the tagging? That would be the darker side of your industry, right?
Yeah. I mean, like the tagging is always going to be in there, and it's in a way, it's like a the human's soul expressing itself. I don't see that as necessarily bad. I see that as just people expressing themselves in any way they can. But however, for building owners that don't want tagging or whatever, it's a matter of getting like the artists that have earned the right to paint the streets as well too. You know, because sometimes if they get like this a high-end street artist that has no relationship with the community or with the graffiti community in itself, then yeah, it's not going to be respected or anything like that. It's always important to get graffiti artists to paint the graffiti murals, and that way they get respected by the graffiti community, because we're a tight community and we support one another to an extent as well. You know, I mean, there's always like little quarrels with any like small culture, any subculture. But in itself, we always respect the art of graffiti and the art of like getting up and doing things and pushing yourself stylistically. But so it's kind of, you know, sometimes it could get like, like political and stuff. But it's always important to get like the graffiti artists to the graffiti murals, because then themselves, then they could maintain those walls, and then they get respected by the graffiti community and they don't get tagged as much. Sometimes there's like, you know, there always just takes one knucklehead with a can that thinks he's, you know, whatchamacallit, or like some homeless guy with a can or whatever, mm-hmm. You know.
Interesting.
Yeah, but we could always clean it up, you know. So there's always this mutual respect by earning your right, you know, within the graffiti world.
And you've been doing this for how long?
I've been doing it for like 10 years, yeah, but I'm still scratching the surface. It's like so vast.
And so how do you describe your look if people, you know, are listening? How would they, if they were to see you and you were painting a wall?
Like, what do you mean without my mask? You mean my face?
No, with your mask.
With my mask?
Describe
my look?
Your mask, yeah.
My mask? Oh, it's a lucha mask. It has Dodger colors. And it's based on Huracan Ramirez. He was called the Hurricane. In English, it's the Hurricane Ramirez. And yeah, it's it has like Aztec symbols. I liked it because of the colors, you know, and, you know, when I wore it, it just gave me like this like special superpower.
Do you actually paint wearing the mask?
Sometimes, yes. Yeah, sometimes. When I'm doing, the murals, the illegal murals, it's a different strategy. It's a whole different monster. For everything, for different practices requires a different you, you know, mm-hmm. So everything from like the live pieces to the run-ups, which we call them, the murals, the illegal murals, to the commission murals, you know, to the paintings, to the tagging, everything requires a different side of you, a different practice.
Have you ever faced a penalty for the illegal murals?
Thankfully, no. I've been close to, been really close, but thankfully, no. And mainly because I try to just put good art, you know, I try to put good stuff out there. But thankfully, no. I've been really close a couple of times, but Nah, I've just, you know, find ways to get out of it.
Well, you're certainly giving me some insight on the industry.
Yeah, it gets pretty crazy.
What is your biggest project that you've done, would you say?
So my biggest project that I've done has been I did a big produce warehouse, and they work a lot with importing from different places, a lot from like Mexico and a lot from China, and a lot from they're like an international importers of produce, and so they had these like big huge blue walls, and they were getting really mangled. They were just getting really destroyed, and I proposed to them doing something, you know, something cultural, but something that represents graffiti as well too, and something that represents like Aztec.
Where is that?
That one is on Alameda and 20th.
I'm sure I've seen that too.
Yeah, that one's hidden. It's definitely hidden, but it's big.
Yeah.
And I like the fact of creating hidden, big hidden murals, because they're not out like on Brea or in Hollywood or something, but it's things that if you're from LA, then you know them, mm-hmm. type of thing, you know? Mm-hmm. And somehow that creates like a cultural resonance within these people. And so you're able to connect with the true residents of LA.
So what is your Instagram?
Oh, my Instagram is Blacklight King. You can also find me on my website, blacklightking.com.
All right. So what is the dream? What's your dream for yourself in life?
Well, career-wise, my dream is to do like huge skyscrapers, blacklight skyscrapers. That's really where I want to take it. You know, I want to paint ones that I could put lights to it, and I could just like move around and create these like scenes in them and narratives behind them. Because once you're dealing with light and color, then the possibilities grow. It becomes endless, you know, especially color spectrum and the way the sun hits it, the way the black light hits it, the way it looks at night, the way they glow in the dark. So then you could create narratives inside of them, and you can make them like move. You could create stories. You could create all kinds of cool things. So I've been doing that in, like, on a small scale, but obviously, you know, as you know, graffiti artists, as like painters, as muralists, we want to go bigger and bigger and bigger. Yeah.
All right, Blacklight King, thanks for coming in.
Thank you so much.
We should give a shout out to our producer on this series, Oscar Flores. And we are so thrilled that you are one of the voices of the people.
Thank you so much.
Kobe Bryant.
We leave you with the song Wings as we take a moment to honor all nine on board that helicopter that crashed in Calabasas, California on January 26, 2020, on the way to Kobe Bryant's Mamba Academy. Those names are John, Alyssa, and Carrie Altobelli, Sarah and Peyton Chester, Christina Mauser, Era Zobayan, Kobe Bryant and his daughter Gianna. Anyone wishing to donate to a fund set up for the families can donate to mambaon3.org. Wings is by singer Tim Johnson Jr. We'll hear his story on another episode of this podcast series, Voices of the People, Kobe Bryant Remembered. You give me wings to fly.